Started. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Daily Power Parsha. I am your host, Rabbi Ari, and it is great to study Torah with you. So this week we have a new Torah portion, and the portion is Akev. So once again, in the book of Deuteronomy, it's Moses speaking to the people, and he is, shocker, I know you weren't expecting this, encouraging them in the ways of Judaism, in the way of Torah, and mitzvot, etc. I'm going to share my screen with you. And we're going to read some verses together. Oh, wow. We're going to read some verses together. Take a look at Akev. If you want to know how to spell Akev, there you go. That's one way in English to do it. Akev in Hebrew is Ayin Kuf Bet, which I'm highlighting right here, which is going to come into importance very, very soon. So Moses is speaking, and it will be, I'm just going to start from the beginning of the portion, and it will be, because you will heed these ordinances and keep them and perform them, in other words, the mitzvot, so because of this, that the Lord your God will keep for you the covenant and the kindness that he swore to your forefathers. So basically Moses is saying that when y'all do what you need to do, God is going to do what he needs to do. Hence the covenant, right? Covenant means a deal. Two parties make a deal. You do this, I do that. God says, you do such and such, go in my ways, etc. And I'll hook you up. I'll give you all the blessings that I promised. But there's some magic in the Hebrew. All of this is the way it's translated and understood on the surface. But there's a much deeper understanding here, and it gets back to the name of the portion, which is Akev. Akev is translated here as because. Because you will heed the ordinances, etc., therefore, or thereby you will get the blessings. Akev means because, but it also means if you revowelize, you know, in the Hebrew, you don't really spell out the vowels, you really use the consonants. So the letters in Hebrew, Ayin Kuf Bet, Akev, could also be read as Akev. Akev, what is Akev? Akev means the heel, like the bottom part of the foot, which prompts Rashi to say, take a look at Rashi. Let's toggle Rashi. Look at this right here. Because you will heed. Hebrew is Akev, literally heel. If you will heed, not heal, heed the minor commandments which one usually tramples with his heels, then God will bless you. In other words, that what Moses is telling the people is not just to keep, you know, Torah and mitzvot, but to keep the ones that people disregard as, it's not a big one. I'll give you an example. Hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, oh, that's a big one. Yom Kippur, oh, it's a big one. Lighting the Hanukkah menorah, oh, big one. Eating matzah, having a Seder on Passover, yeah, that's a big one. What about saying Shema every morning before the third hour of the day, which right now is around 9:30? Maybe not, right? Whatever. If I remember, I'll get around to it. What about, I don't know, we can come up with 1,000 of them, right? But we know, like, helping support good causes and giving charity to the poor, that's big. But what about the small stuff? So what is Moses, according to Rashi's commentary, what is Moses really telling the people? Not just if you keep the mitzvot, then God's going to hook you up. But if you keep the ones, even the ones that are minor, the ones that seemingly are a little, you know, that people usually trample with their heels, then you get the blessings. In other words, let me give you a modern way of expressing this. God is in the details, the small details, the everyday stuff that sometimes we think, it's not that important. Does it really matter if this, that, or the other, or next time I'll do it? It's the small stuff that really defines the relationship that we have with God. And to give you just a human example, it's nice to remember your loved one on their birthday or on an anniversary, but if that's the extent of the relationship, only on the big days, oh, yeah, yeah, on Mother's Day, I get you a car, but otherwise, I have no connection, right? If our only connection is on the big days, what I would call the Hallmark days, the monetized days, the car days, then that's not really going to make a solid relationship. Or let's put it, instead of the negative, let's do the positive. The positive spin, or the positive angle, would be that it's when we do the little things that we really bolster and build a strong relationship. It's the everyday, you know, do a little thing for the other, a little word, a little action, a little thought, a little sensitivity, a little, all the little things that we do are what really create the relationship. A relationship is not built only on big things. That's a relationship that's usually not so strong, but at least on the anniversary, you know, there's a dinner or something. That doesn't create a relationship. So the same thing is true with God. Moses is telling us, don't just do the big stuff. I mean, do the big stuff also, but it's also the little things. It's the little things that build our relationship with God. God is in the details. Okay, make sense? All right. Now, what happens if we do this stuff? Oh, wait, let me toggle Rashi off. Rashi, we love you, but it's easier to read it without. So, and then what will happen? Oh, look at the blessings. He will love you, and he will bless you, and he will multiply you and bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your soil, your grain, your wine, your oil, the offspring of your cattle and the choice of your flock in the land which he swore to your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There will be no sterile man or barren female among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will remove from you all illness and all of the evil diseases of Egypt, which you knew he will not set upon you. In other words, the plagues won't befall you, but he will lay them upon all your enemies. Okay, got to make sure to get that one in. All right. And you shall consume all the peoples which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not spare them, nor shall you worship their gods, for that will be a snare for you. And will you say to yourself, these nations are more numerous than I, how will I be able to drive them out? So Moses says, once again, don't worry, you shall not fear them. You shall surely remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt, the great trials that your eyes saw, the signs, the wonders, the mighty hand, the outstretched arm, etc. So will the Lord your God do to all the peoples you fear. Okay, don't be afraid, etc., etc. Okay, here we go. Very interesting verse. And the Lord your God will drive out those nations from before you. This is referring to the nations inhabiting the land of Canaan that the Jewish people are going to settle. So the Lord will drive out these nations from before you little by little. You will not be able to destroy them quickly, lest the beasts of the field outnumber you. So what we find here is it's an interesting message, you know, taking out of this context and apply it to all of us in our lives. But sometimes when we have to, because this is all symbolic of kind of rooting out negativity. I mentioned before that we have seven, Kabbalah explains we have seven character traits, starting from Chesed, ending in Malchut, seven emotions, seven midot, seven character traits that could either be good or not so good. In other words, you could have healthy love and good love, or you could have unhealthy obsession and whatever. You could have healthy discipline or unhealthy hatred and anger and rage. So you have a healthy version of all of these kind of emotional qualities and an unhealthy version. And the deeper spiritual drama at play here is the notion of conquering the seven nations means conquering the seven negative forms of our personality, of our character traits, and replacing them with the holy versions. But what's interesting here is that as the Torah, as Moses attests to, the process is going to be slow. It's going to be little by little, right? Sometimes when we get inspired spiritually, we jump all in and we might end up biting off more than we can chew. So in life, in spiritual progress as in life, it's the slow and steady that wins the race. It's not about winning a race, actually, but it's about It's about progress. It's about getting there. And the idea is if we're, you know, a big campaign, huge campaign, that's it. Today, I'm going to be a tzaddik. Today, I'm going to be a perfectly righteous. Take it slow. Take it slow. Work on one thing at a time. Work on one inner character trait at a time. In other words, what I'm using is this: these verses that speak about the ancient, you know, approach of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, understood in Kabbalah and Hasidic philosophy, Chabad philosophy. It's a personal message. It's a personal drama. It's how do we approach the stuff in our lives that needs fixing? And the answer is, one item at a time. Don't take on too many projects. We know what multitasking looks like, right? Multitasking sometimes ends in, you know, you're juggling too many balls, some of them are going to fall. So the safer way of doing it is little by little, one at a time, you know, work on one quality, work on one area of your life that needs to be worked on, and optimize that, and then move on to the next. Okay, so that's some advice from the ancient approach of the Jewish people. Oh yeah, Don asks, you shall be blessed above all peoples. Yeah, I think that's what it means, the idea of chosen, which doesn't necessarily always mean better. It's not a judgment of better, even though above certainly implies that. It means rather chosen for a specific mission and chosen for a specific task. And, you know, part of that is the Jewish mission, which includes the 613 mitzvot. And it also includes being a light unto the nation. So I think maybe that's, to me, that's kind of the indication there. Above all peoples mean kind of like leading the charge, which we know historically. We had a course that we taught, I don't know, it's hard to remember time now, but the course that we taught called Judaism's Gifts to the World, where we spoke about all these wonderful universal values and how they originated in Judaism. And so, you know, in Torah and Judaism. So that's the way I understand it. Once again, back inside, the Moses really encourages us to not keep around any idolatrous stuff, you know, the graven images of their gods you will burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or the gold that is upon them and take it for yourself, lest you be ensnared by it. So the idea is that idolatry is such a temptation. If you keep it around, it's like a memento, it could end up in sucking us into idolatrous practices. Okay, all of that is the first part of our discussion. Now let's continue. Moses does some recalling, and there's a very important verse over here. Which we'll get to soon. It's actually in the next reading, but we'll get to it soon. So what Moses does now is he recalls the journeys of the last 40 years, and he reframes some of the challenges that the Jewish people faced as a way of God testing their belief, their faith. Look at verse 2. And you shall remember the entire way in which the Lord your God led you these 40 years in the desert in order to afflict you, to test you. In other words, it was challenging. It wasn't always easy. What was the point of that? To know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And here we have a powerful idea. And that is that God definitely puts tests in front of our way in life. Just because it's in front of us doesn't mean that it's meant for us to take. For example, it might be a test if we could be strong enough to not take it, to not fail in the test. I'll give you an example. Somebody might say that I believe in divine providence. I believe that everything is predestined, everything is ordained by God. Wonderful. Sounds like a lot of belief. Therefore, the person might say, because I believe that everything is predestined by God, if the person at the store left the cash register open, with money inside, then I believe that God intended for me to have that money because look, it's right in front of me. So the Torah says, no, there's another option, and that is that this is a test, not of the emergency broadcast system. No, that's something else. This is a test to see what is in your heart. Will you follow his commandments or not? Will you do what's right or will you be tempted by what's wrong? Just because it's in front of you, just because it's available. And I'm using an easy example of a cash register with money. But there are many other subtle examples and maybe even more difficult challenges, stuff that we might convince ourselves, wow, the opportunity presented itself, once in a lifetime chance, no one will know about it, no harm, no foul, let me just try it once, right? All of these excuses, all of these justifications and rationalizations that we might offer for ourselves to make ourselves do something we know is not so kosher, right? So the Torah, Moses is telling the people, telling us through Torah, don't do it, don't do it. Sometimes God presents us tests, and the message is, don't do it. Do the right thing. Don't. Okay, fine. Next, we have a discussion about the manna. And he afflicted you and let you go hungry. Right? When after the Exodus, I mean, how much matzah did they have? Right? The stores were out of Manischewitz after a while. You have 2 million Jews buying up Manischewitz. You're done. So they were hungry. And then God fed you with manna, which you did not know. It's a very strange food, nor did your forefathers know. You can't buy manna at Trader Joe's. Sorry. So why did he do this? Or even Whole Foods? So that he would make you... Yeah. So that he would make you know. Why did God give you manna, which is this bizarre food, food from heaven? So that he would make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but rather by whatever comes forth from the mouth of the Lord does man live. God can sustain you however God wants. It doesn't need to be traditional food. That's the message. By God you live, not by the food, not by bread. By the way, this line, that man does not live by bread alone, I believe was used decades ago as a commercial, as a tagline for a beef, for a like a fast food place, that man does not live by bread alone, so buy the Whopper, right? Whatever, that was a tagline for a marketing agency. But getting back to our point is that God, that what Moses is telling the people is that God gave us the manna to give us the message, to give you the message, Moses says, that we're not sustained by the physical part of the food, but rather by God's blessing within that food. So it could be bread, it could be meat, it could be sushi, it could be manna from heaven. Doesn't matter. If God makes it happen, it'll happen. Bottom line is, we should remember where the true blessing and true sustenance is coming from. Not only that, not only did God bless you with his wild food, your clothing did not wear out upon you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Can you imagine a bunch of Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years? Oh, my foot is swelling. All right, no foot swelling. No need for... Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Oh, and here's a mitzvah that we do hopefully every day. And you will eat and be sated, and you shall bless the Lord. Right? That's the mitzvah of the blessing after a meal. After you eat and are satisfied, then you shall give thanks. You shall bless the Lord your God for the good land that he has given you. This becomes the source for the blessing after a meal that we say after we eat. And it's true when we eat a meal with bread, even other meals, there's always a blessing after the food that we eat. The rabbis, this is biblical, the rabbis added a blessing before we eat also. So the biblical mitzvah is the blessing after we eat. The rabbinic one is also before we eat. Okay, so we have a blessing sandwich when we're eating our sandwich, before and after. Second reading, which is for Monday, which is for today. Yeah. Moses says, be careful. When you go into the land, things might be so good, you forget God. This is a theme that also repeats itself. Look at this, verse 12. Lest you eat and be sated, we just talked about that, and then build good houses and dwell therein, and your herds and flocks multiply, and your silver and gold increase, the market's doing well, and all they have increases, and here's the problem. Then your heart will grow haughty, and you forget the Lord your God who had brought you out of the land of Egypt and your house of bondage. Don't forget where you came from, Moses says. Don't forget your roots. Don't forget God who led you through that great and awesome desert in which there were snakes, vipers, and scorpions, and drought, where there was no water, who brought water for you out of solid rock, who fed you with manna in the desert, which your forefathers did not know in order to afflict you. We just had that before. Or to test you, to benefit you in your end. And you will say, you will forget this, and you will say, my strength and the might of my hand that has my strength and the might of my hand is that has accumulated this wealth for me. I don't know, there's a word missing there. whatever. Anyway, Moses is saying, be careful that you don't fall into this trap of thinking that you're a self-made man, a self-made woman, a self-made person, that you don't need, who needs God anymore? The market's doing well. Who needs God? I got a nice house and a nice palm tree and a nice date tree and a nice olive grove. You know, things are great. Who needs God? Who needs to pray? Life is going well. Don't make that mistake, says Moses. But you must remember the Lord your God. For it is he that gives you the strength to make wealth in order to establish his covenant, which he swore to your forefathers as it is today, as it is this day. Anyway, bottom line is, Moses says, don't get too high with the highs and forget about where the blessings are coming from. Take things for granted, etc., etc. Remember where it comes from. Okay, one more point that I want to mention, because there's so many beautiful details in what we just read. But one, I think we'll end with this verse right here. Describes the desert that the Jews traveled through. Describes it as with various adjectives. So let's do it in the English. Number one, the desert was great. Number two, it was awesome. But awesome here means fearful. So there's great, big or grand. Then you have awesome, which really means fearful. And then there were snakes, vipers, scorpions, and then a drought without water. Okay. The Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in an epic exposition talk on this verse, explained how this verse takes us through the process of a person losing their spiritual footing and falling into a negative place. And it begins, how do we lose our spiritual identity? How do we lose our spiritual compass? It all begins by thinking of the world, the desert, the world, materialism, other stuff that's not so meaningful as great. We become impressed by it. Oh, wow, look at that. That looks interesting. That looks amazing. Wow, we become impressed by it. Once we become impressed by it, then we can start becoming, we can feel less than because of what others say. Let's paint it in a very Jewish context. This is true in any context, but let's paint it in a Jewish context. You know, it's no surprise, it's no shock, or it's no, nothing new that I'm telling you that the Jewish people are a minority in the world. All right, we're a minority. We're a minority of a minority. We're a point something. We're a fraction of a percent of the world population. 8-9 billion people, and we're 15 million. It's like tiny, tiny amount. So how do we stay proud Jews that are committed to our uniqueness and not ready to just let it go and assimilate? So we have to resist that temptation to assimilate and just be, you know, part of the melting pot like everyone else. How do we do that? We have to understand how we get into that losing our identity in the first place. It all begins by thinking of the world as being great, become impressed, and then we become self-conscious about it. We become, oh, wow, no one's doing what I do. I feel embarrassed, right? So first thing is you give it a lot of credence. Wow, look at that. And then you're like, oh, shoot, what am I doing? I don't want to be the Jewy person. I don't want to, I'm in the airport in the morning and I need to pray. So I'm going to wrap tefillin and everyone's going to look at me. I'm going to look funny. That makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm going to be the one that asks for the kosher meal, you know, back when people would fly. Like, what? That sounds uncomfortable. So first step one is of the descent. This is step charting the descent. Step one is we think of the world as bigger than it really is, or like we become impressed, and then we become self-conscious. We become embarrassed. We become afraid of the desert, of the world, and then snakes, and then vipers, and then scorpions. Various types of negativity. We become snakes as the venom is hot, which the Rebbe says means that we become passionate about worldly matters and I forget what vipers are, but scorpions means then the venom of scorpions are cold, which means that we become cold and apathetic and cynical to Jewish things. And then there's drought, and then we're thirsty, we're searching for meaning, and there's no water. We don't even know where to look anymore because we're so disconnected from our roots that we know we're missing something, and we can't even remember what we're missing. We became so consumed by the world, and the world says, oh, no, you don't need anything like that, any Judaism or spirituality. We got all this stuff. And so we said, all right, I'm in. And then we realized that it didn't work for us, and we were empty inside, and we're thirsty, but there's no water. We don't even know where to look. The good news is there's always a chance. There's always a way back. And how does that happen? It happens with step one. Don't be so impressed with the world. It's like the Rebbe once said, the whole world condemns and criticizes Israel. Human rights violations. The UN, the United Nations, has never criticized a nation more than the state of Israel, which is shocking when you think about the state of human rights in countries bordering Israel. And again, that just because others are worse doesn't mean that everything is perfect. No nation is perfect, including Israel. But it's important to realize that when a nation is targeted, there's a message. And the Rebbe once spoke about this and said, it's kind of funny how, you know, these nations that are saying that Jews are doing this, that, and the other are the same people that not that long ago were, you know, involved in cannibalism at a time when the Torah had the foundations of human rights. The Torah talked about people being created in the divine image and about not killing, not murdering people. And none of the other nations cared about that stuff. Now you're lecturing us on what's right and wrong. It's first thing is to not be so impressed, right? Don't be so like, oh, wow, that's how you do things. So maybe take it easy. Be confident in who you are. Be proud of who you are. Don't become so in Yiddish, Hebrew Yiddish. Yiddish, we would say, don't become so nispal. Don't become so like, you know, just because someone said something else. Take it easy. All right. Let them gain. Let them do the way they do. You do the way you do. They do they. You do you. So what are you getting so impressed by? So number one, it all begins with this. They're not so great. Take it easy. Take it easy. It's like we have our way of doing things. What the world's way is so much better. Everyone's so happy. Seriously. People say, oh, it's archaic. Oh, Torah, it's archaic. Everyone's happy. Everyone's doing well. Everyone's life is great. Come on. Who are you kidding? You're telling me that this is not working. Your system's working. I mean, come on. Anyway, the first step is not so great. And if it's not so great, then nothing to be afraid about, nothing to be so excited about, nothing to be cynical about, and you'll find meaning. You won't have the drought. Hope that made sense. I'm trying to do justice to a very, in my opinion, a very profound exposition on this verse in Deuteronomy chapter 8, and hopefully it's coming through in the short and the compressed context that we have for this discussion. So what's the bottom line? What's the bottom line of this last point is be confident and be proud of who you are. Yes, you can be happy for others and you can, it's fine. We live in a world and we're good neighbors, but never feel inferior, never feel small, never feel like, well, they're big or they're right and I'm small and I'm wrong. Don't put yourself in that place. Be confident with who you are and you have nothing to worry about. That's the final message. What do we explore today? A bunch of things, including that last message. I don't think I can review it all because we did a bunch of different things. All right, questions, comments. I see some stuff in the chat, or I saw stuff come into the chat. Let me take a read. Let's check out the chat. No, where's my chat? Here we go. Oh, yeah, bench. Yeah, Mark is saying that's why he benches, right? No, not that bench. Bench means Yiddish, it means bless. Blessing after meal, exactly. Yeah, it's Torah law, yeah. And by the way, it's like what we said before. You know, like the stuff that we might be tempted to, like, you know, brush under our heels, like, tomorrow's meal. No, it's important, right? It's a mitzvah. There's no difference between this and shofar and Rosh Hashanah. The only difference is frequency. This can be done every meal, so it becomes thought of as more casual, whereas Rosh Hashanah, it's once a year, so it becomes very important. It's the same Torah that says, Here the shofar in Rosh Hashanah says, don't forget to thank God after you eat. Okay, so it requires a little bit more attention on a more consistent basis. It's like asking, what's more important, caviar or oxygen? I would say oxygen, but caviar gets more, I don't know, I've never had caviar, so I can't actually, whatever. But, you know, it becomes more exotic because it's once in a while, but just because it's more exotic doesn't mean it's any more important. On the contrary, that which is more frequent might be even more important. So same thing is true with Rosh Hashanah, with shofar, or matzah on Passover. It's exotic. It's a novelty. It's once a year. All right. But benching, it's same Torah law. Rashi's Chumash translates, Mark, what did you say, leads, not led? Oh, who leads you in the desert. God leads you currently. Yeah, that's important, by the way. That's important because the Jews were still traveling. Think about it. They were still traveling. And if we read Torah as we're meant to do, as a timeless guide for our living, what it means is that God is with us right now in our journeys through whatever desert it's all like, it all happened then, but it's all metaphoric, you know, and timeless for us. You know, God is leading us through the desert, through our challenges. And we can play a good role by being confident in who we are. Boiling a kid in its actual... By the way, you know, let me just give you another practical example. Person has a job, and they're starting to get into, let's say, Shabbat, and they're now, you know, the boss says, hey, what about Saturday, working, whatever, and now they're in a quandary, like, oh, shoot, do I say something about Shabbat? Do I say that, you know, I'm Jewish, and I, you know, I'd rather not, you know, So now there's like a quandary, like, what do I do? So that last verse that I spent a little bit of time on says, be confident. Say, listen, you know, this is, you don't have to be, you know, too over the top, but look, you know, this is important to me. This is what it is. I'm going to make it up some other time, make it up, you know, another day or whatever it is. But when we make it big, then it becomes big. You know, you make, and this is true in any area in life. Sometimes we build things up in our heads, and then it becomes impossible to take on because we've built it as such a monster, because it became so big. We overinflated it. And then we can't overcome it because it's overwhelming. First step is it's not so terrible, it's not so frightful, it's not so awesome, it's not so great. It's a conversation. That's it. Be confident who you are, have a conversation. Anyway, just again, a practical application of that last bit. Boiling a kid in its actual mother's milk was a ritual of idol worshippers. Yeah. Well, we didn't talk about that today. That was a ritual of idol worshippers. Yeah. Sounds pretty terrible, if you ask me. Okay, good. That's it for today. Thank you for joining me for Daily Power Parsha. Tonight, we do not have a program, but tomorrow night, we are starting the Jewish course of Why. So join me. All your questions. Bring your questions. I have 50 questions we are going to explore. 50 of the most popular questions that I've been asked about Judaism, Jewish culture, Jewish tradition, Bible stories. Top 50 questions about Judaism and Jews we're going to address, plus questions that you bring to the table. No holds barred. No questions no questions off limits. Join us tomorrow night, 8 p.m., Tuesday night, August 4th, for the Jewish course of Why. All right, that's it for today. See y'all soon. Take care. Have a wonderful day. Great to study together. Bye, everyone.